Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
And before I go on in my mini-series, One Way to Apostasy via Christian magazines, or so-called Christian magazines, I want to do what I do best, and that is digress, to say a few more things about the Roman Catholic Church. You know, I had recently addressed the Evangelical Catholics Together movement, which about 20 years ago became a reality, and Albert Dagher was speaking about, I was using one of his resources from Media Spotlight in discussing that whole movement and the response to it by people like Dave Hunt and and others. And I wanted to, but recently some things happened, and I really want to be sensitive to the Lord's leading. And so I had started looking again at progressivism and kind of building a framework to look at Sojourners Magazine. But we will do that in the next podcast or two, depending on how far I get today. As I once again want to look at some things that have been concerning me about the whole issue of Roman Catholicism. Now, I have pointed out, actually, over the last 2 years that I've been doing this program, I have pointed out the Roman Catholic Church's attempts to help build the coming one world religion. Revelation 17 talks about this one world religion. A woman rides the beast, this harlot church that is spoken of, and I believe that the Roman Catholic Church will certainly play a part. I don't know if it'll be the key role or not, but it's certainly with with a professed 1 billion Christians, which of course I don't believe this is true Christianity, but with this many people claiming to be Christians, joined in with various other religions, this will be, I believe, this future one world religion, which is really being built and has been being built for some time now. And I have been in earlier podcasts pointing out the Roman Catholic Church's attempts to help build this church, this false church, through the ecumenical and the interfaith movements. Now, with the ecumenical movement, of course, this has to do with groups that claim to be Christian groups. And I have shown the information, the evidence, the current events of Rome's involvement with various groups, liberal Protestant type groups, you know, the World Council of Churches, Reformation type groups, Lutherans, you know, not all Lutherans, of course, Anglicans, again, not all Anglicans, but as the Anglican Church, much of this church, Church of England, has its leaders have been very open to Rome. We've looked at, of course, the Evangelical and Catholics Together movement with professing Christians of an evangelical flavor, and then charismatic types. Past popes have had their contacts with the Benny Hinns and the Joel Osteens, who are very favorable towards the popes and the Catholic churches. And then most recently, with this present pope, Pope Francis, and Kenneth Copeland's organization, Kenneth Copeland and others, I should say, of the charismatic stripe, of the Word Faith, actually prosperity movement type. So Rome has made, you know, many attempts and reached out to many people who've been open, and we just see all this taking place. But also, of course, the interfaith movement, co-joining together so-called Christianity, so-called Catholic Christianity, co-joining together with non-Christian religions, pagan religions. I remember when I first moved out to California in 1986, and the headlines of the LA Times was that Pope John Paul II was meeting in Assisi, Italy, with world religious leaders to pray for world peace. And of course, it included spiritists and snake handlers and the Dalai Lama, the Buddhist leader, one of the Buddhist leaders, all these various non-saved, not even professing to be Christian groups, and joined together with that pope. And of course, this the various popes that have followed, including our present Pope Francis, have been involved in many cultures, and in many cultures, I should say, I have seen the acceptance in my travels. I've seen the acceptance in various countries, in third world countries, of folk religious occultic type beliefs and groups into the Roman Catholic Church in their local parishes and jurisdictions, without these people leaving the demonic beliefs that make up these folk religions and occultic groups that they're involved with. You know, I saw in Brazil and in other countries where I traveled, this occultism with a Roman Catholic veneer, a thin veneer layered on top of the occultists. Of course, in other words, I'm not saying that all people in these countries were occultists that were part of the Catholic Church, but in some, a big number are. They say in Brazil, something like 75 to 80% of the people there are touched directly or indirectly by spiritism. And of course, you know, they have their forms of occultic religion. And you know, you find voodoo in some countries and Santeria and various occultic forms. So I've seen personally this phenomenon, and it's very unsettling. Now, as long as the Roman Catholic Church gets to keep the converts in these third world countries, they seem to be just fine with this practice. And I think what you see as you travel around the world, in certain countries where the Catholic Church is kind of the controlling religious religious group of that country, you will see that there's sort of an unsanitized version of Catholicism, I like to call it, because in the United States, although we have many people turning to the occult, etc., it's not so much folk religions and everything else aren't a big part of us, of our country and our culture, as they are in a lot of the third world countries. And so I call it, you know, we have sort of a sanitized version of Roman Catholicism here, where there's still the interfaith beliefs and practices, but the people here, a lot of people are unaware of what goes on in the third world countries that I've seen personally, and that, you know, is easy to document. And then, of course, you have in other countries where the Orthodox Church, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Church, and you see, you know, their interfaith activities, which are probably a little bit less. They're comfortable. They seem to be more and more making overtures back and forth with the Catholic Church. But like Catholicism, they will claim to be the only true church. And anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So I want to move on and just say that, you know, needless to say, it is contradictory at the very least to say that you only get to heaven through the Roman Catholic Church, yet you have all of these, I don't know if inclusive is the right word, but you have all of these different groups that are included that, you know, are really trafficking with demons, doctrines of demons, seducing spirits. I mean, seducing spirits for real, even if there's no doctrines, and there would be some, but I mean just outright occultic practices that are tolerated within some of these third world Catholic parishes, etc. Now, the result that, you know, basically saying that the only way you get to heaven is through the Catholic Church, and the Pope, every Pope, the last three or four Popes that I know of, have all made those public statements, you know, that, hey, when it all comes down to push comes to shove, the Catholic Church is the true church. It's the only way in. That's what they've always believed, actually, that they have the keys to the kingdom. And you don't get in without them. So, you know, having that belief alongside of including these other, like I say, these inclusive type groups, the result of all that really I see is confusion, compromise, and then capitulation to many people. And that leads me, that capitulation word there, that leads me to two things that have really been bothering me recently. It's nice when you have a podcast that you can vent some of your frustrations, but you know, recently, it's been bothering me that, you know, you see more and more compromise with the Roman Catholic Church among evangelicals, which is, of course, where I live. I like to consider myself more of a fundamentalist, really, than an evangelical, the direction the evangelical church has been going now for many years. But, you know, many people that I fellowship with would be considered evangelicals, or they would call themselves evangelicals. And so in that world that I live in, I see more and more compromise with the Roman Catholic Church. And I think probably hand in hand with that, I see less and less interest in biblical prophecy. I think there's several reasons for that, but that troubles me as well, because I do not, for the life of me, understand how true Christians can live in a time like we're living and not be interested in Bible prophecy, seeing the things that are taking place all around us in our culture, throughout the world's culture. And that's a whole study, of course. But and I praise God for those who are still interested in Bible prophecy. But I just see in my own realm, in my own experience, that compromise with the Catholic Church, less interest in Bible prophecies. And I will look at later in this podcast or next week, you know, these two problems really go, I think, hand in hand. The fact that people are compromising with Rome and less interest. But anyway, I will hopefully get to that later in the broadcast today. Lately, I've heard people say things like, you know, I have a friend who's a born-again Catholic. And, of course, they're staying in their Catholic church instead of what I think should happen, and that is that they should come out from among them. And, you know, what I'm not hearing is the people who tell me this, they're saying it, the only way I can understand it is, okay, so it's a good thing because they're born-again Catholics, you know. And maybe they are born-again Catholics, but what I'm not hearing is, you know, that they may be born-again, but they've not been born again, or that they have been saved or born again in spite of the Catholic Church, not because of it. Because, of course, that's a whole different gospel. It's not the true gospel. The gospel of Rome is not the gospel of the Bible. And therefore, it's not a gospel because it's not good news. And that's what the word gospel means, is good news, of course. So that disclaimer should be given, I think, when people say, you know, I have this born-again Catholic friend. Great. But please don't just leave it at that, as though that's a good thing and that's okay and that's fine because they're born again. And I'll have more comments about that. Like I say, I do my little venting here. But, you know, I can understand for the sake of family unity, etc., you know, staying in the, you know, for the sake of family unity, but also for staying in the Catholic Church and trying to convert your family and friends to the true gospel. But, you know, when is it time to leave? When is it time to move on? And that's a rhetorical question. But, you know, is it really likely that Roman Catholic leaders are going to want or allow you to convert their sheep in their parishes to come to the real gospel, to the real biblical truth? You know, I would say, you know, perish the thought, you know, pun intended there, you know. But in their parishes, you know, they don't really want people to go away from Rome or the Catholic beliefs and ideas. So I don't say that it's natural that you want to try to convert family and friends, and you should pray and seek to do that. But do you need to stay in the Catholic Church to do that? I don't think that's particularly necessary. Maybe for the sake of your family unity and peace and not being persecuted, maybe. But anyway, moving on, how does the born-again Catholic obey Jesus in helping to complete the Great Commission, which he's commissioned all of his followers to be a part of, you know, reaching out with the gospel and discipling people, you know, as you bring them to Christ, to salvation? You know, how do you complete this, help to complete the Great Commission without being able to bring new converts to a real biblical church to help to disciple them? I mean, you could do it on your own, but, you know, God desires for us not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together with true believers. And so that's another question that you know, I had to think through these things recently, because it was really bugging me because I kept hearing that, you know, well, I have this friend, he's born again Catholic. Okay, great. Now, and how long do you justify staying in a false church? You know, when Jesus himself said that those who will ultimately, you know, that those who follow him will ultimately be hated for loving him, for loving and following the real Jesus. Now, you know, later I'm going to be speaking from a document. I'm not even going to mention the document now, but it is written by an ex-Catholic. And I just want to say something from the back of his fold-out chart. And again, I'll name the author, etc., later. Right now, I just want to make a point, or just add to what I'm saying about those, and he says, under how can you help in reaching Catholics? He says, encourage a clean break. Now, this is talking about somebody who is coming out of Catholicism. He says, help your friend to find a church where the Bible is taught and upheld as the sole standard of the Christian faith. Additionally, explain the value of discarding of everything associated with unbiblical beliefs and practices. Of course, there's many man-made traditions in the Catholic Church that you should discard and get away from. Pray for spiritual liberation and encourage the individual regularly. And another point, he says, anticipate trials. Jesus taught that following him may often involve opposition, particularly from family members. And that's from Matthew 10:34-39. Prepare a newly saved Catholic to expect trials. You know, Jesus had some hard sayings in his word, or they're referred to as hard sayings. And the gospel, well, again, don't want to get ahead of myself, but, you know, I know of two people, okay? I didn't know them personally. I did meet one of them, but I knew of two different people. One of them that were disowned from their family, lost their inheritance, you know, for leaving their false religious systems. One was Jewish, not Messianic Jews, you know, not someone who was leaving a Jewish Christian group, but who had left Judaism and, you know, faced the being disowned. Also a Jehovah's Witness that I know of. Same thing happened. They were disowned from the family and lost their inheritance. That's a big price to pay. But, you know, Jesus calls us to follow him. He calls us to follow him through whatever difficult times and things that we must face. Now, if you preach the true gospel in a Catholic church, it is inevitable that you will face the same fate, I think, or you'll compromise the truth. You know, sure, in some cases, and hopefully so, family members will come to Christ. And that does happen as well. But, you know, if you preach the true gospel in a Catholic church, you are going to face a similar fate. You know, you're going to face rejection and possibly being disowned by your family and everything else. So, or compromising the truth, which you certainly do not want to do. Now, sometimes, as I say, it can be a very difficult call. Salvation is a free gift, okay? Don't get me wrong. Ephesians chapter 2, 8 through 10 makes that clear. It's a gift of God. By, you know, we trust in Christ. We accept that free gift. And it's not of works. But in following Christ, we will have some difficulties from time to time. That is for sure. And you can find that, of course, in the record of the Gospels, in the book of Acts, and then in the New Testament. Now, as I mentioned, I heard a couple of people. I mentioned people talking about their born-again Catholic friends, but I heard two people in a class recently say that they had born-again Catholic friends still in their Catholic churches, and I was compelled to say what they didn't. And that was, I wanted to point out to the other people in the class, yes, you know, they may be saved. I hope they are saved, and they may be. But they're saved in spite of, not because of the Catholic Church. Because when you just leave it hanging like that, people can be led to believe like, oh, they were born again. They're born again Catholics with the Catholics. You know, that's all the same. Evangelicals and Catholics together. There's no real difference. Yes, there is. There's big, big differences. And we've gone over that in previous podcasts, but and most recently. But I think that in that class, I was thankful that the rhetorical question of the leader was asked, you know, doesn't Rome say that Peter was the first pope? And then he pointed out, and doesn't the Bible teach that he was a married man? And the answer to both of those questions is yes. Yes, Rome teaches that Peter was the first pope. And yes, the Bible teaches that Peter was a married man. And of course, that's a Catholic no-no for priests and popes to be married. Am I correct there for those of you who know a little bit about Catholic theology or who are ex-Catholics? And that's my rhetorical question. You know, I know the answer to that question. It is a man-made tradition that the Catholic Church says that Peter was the first pope, and they failed to remind you that he was also a married man. So there's something not quite right here, is there? Anyway, you know, the more I see the ecumenical nature of the Roman Catholic Church and evangelicals, the more troubling I find it to be. You know, I remember years ago being asked if I wanted to be part of a large prison ministry. And I thought, well, that would be great. When I was in Bible college, I did my Christian service 1 year at a jail and preached in the jails. And I thought that was a great ministry. I was thankful that I wasn't in jail. I was thankful for the grace of God in my life. But I was asked, you know, this was years later after I had graduated from Bible college and went on with my life. And I was asked if I'd like to be a part. And so I went to one of their meetings and I got some of their materials. And as I studied the materials, you know, I found that they didn't allow counselors to bring their Bibles to the prison out of concern that there may be debate among their ecumenical counselors over various issues. And, you know, I'm going to mention a few of those things right here. And the problem is, it's because this is an ecumenical group, this particular group, that this prison ministry type group. And it says that our teams are made up mostly of members from the major Christian denominations, including Methodists, Episcopalians, Catholics, Baptists, Lutherans, Presbyterians, and all other evangelicals. We each have different beliefs and traditions. We probably could get a real fight going in most of our meetings by bringing these differences up, but mostly we avoid them. We don't talk about baptism, Eucharist, the Trinity, Marian theology, or in other words, Catholic Mary theology, who can be a priest and who can't, and a host of other potentially divisive issues. Now, you know, I kind of, a little logic tells me that, all right, then there's not a real problem with Catholic theology. There's not a real problem with having oneness Pentecostals who don't believe in the Trinity, who are heretical. You know, it's, you know, we don't want to bring our Bibles to the prison, and because we're on a mission here, and so we don't want to, and you know, we don't want to cause strife and division and all that, even though the Trinity is an essential doctrine of the Christian faith, and so many of the Catholic beliefs are bad and wrong. What a compromise, you know, just for the sake of warm bodies, I suppose. But anyway, so, you know, yeah, people aren't allowed to actually bring their Bibles for fear of getting into debates and messing up the harmony and all. And, you know, out of concern that they may be debate among their ecumenical counselors over, you know, Catholic matters, oneness, heresy, etc. And somehow, you know, their touchy-feely gospel, excuse me, their touchy-feely gospel presentation does not allow some major doctrinal problems to be addressed. And, of course, my question is, are warm bodies or workers so needed that major compromises are allowed? And I guess the answer is yes. And it didn't take me long to figure out that this wasn't the place for me. And so I wasn't going to be a part of that. Some of the other things from their literature, it says, you know, we all come with different denominational differences, but we lay those differences down and lift up the thing that each of us holds in common. This means we avoid practices and discussions that are denominationally dividing, such as communion, altar calls, praying the rosary, laying on of hands, baptism, etc. Yeah, but here's the problem. If people believe in some of these things which are really bad, you know, as far as I'm concerned, praying the rosary and not believing in the Trinity and different things of that nature and other things that I mentioned before, what happens when, you know, the person, the ex-prisoner, the ex-con, heads to a counselor-recommended Roman Catholic church or a oneness, anti-Trinitarian church when they leave the prison and say, it's all good. You know, I got my touchy-feely gospel presentation. I'm all set to go. I got my warm, fuzzy feelings. So as long as I got my feelings, I'm good. I'll just go to that church that, you know, my Catholic brother or my oneness brother recommended to me. So, you know, to me, it's such an obvious problem. It's such an obvious compromise. And, you know, the, let's see if I can, yeah, avoid putting down others' theology. Well, you know, some theology ought to be put down, but in the sake of this unity, also the organization, its materials, it says that, you know, they're ecumenical. Well, yeah, that's pretty obvious. Part of the foundation of this ministry is that it is an ecumenical ministry. That is, we embrace all Christian churches as partners in our ministry to the prisoner. It says we avoid any criticism of others' beliefs, and in return, they avoid criticizing our beliefs. We stay unified in our common ground of Christ. And there again, to repeat myself, We are to avoid any activities that are denominationally dividing. For example, we avoid altar calls, laying on of hands, praying the rosary, baptism, Marian theology, feminization of the deity, etc., even if there are no objections from team members. Well, my question is, why in the world would you want to have this type of ecumenical compromise, you know, just to have more warm bodies, to go help people with a questionable gospel that's being presented? You know, is it really the true gospel that's being presented? I have to wonder. But anyway, you know, of course, this is a major problem, and I've seen the same problem with large crusades worldwide. You know, the idea that you go to countries where Catholic Church is predominant, or even the Orthodox Church, again, Russian Orthodox. I've been to these countries. I've seen what happens where these dominating religious groups persecute other, you know, true believers. Okay, to a degree, maybe not the same degree as what took place in the Middle Ages, but there's definitely a persecution that takes place there and an attempt to stifle the true gospel, and that's a real problem. And so what happens is, what I've seen with these large crusades is that to allow these crusades to take place in these countries that are dominated by these particular fake Christian organizations, I want to call them, they're allowed to intersperse their counselors with true biblical counselors, you know, causing the same bad result as I mentioned before, as the prisoner being told, hey, you know, why don't you come to my Catholic church? Why don't you come to my Oneness church? Why don't you come to the Orthodox church? You know, it's the only true church, or whatever. So it's the same principle, the same kind of problem, the same kind of compromise, and the same kind of bad result. Now, often, you know, I think that's the compromise or the price that was to be paid to allow the crusade in that country in the first place, in that Catholic or Orthodox dominated country by the organization that came in there. So it's very sad, but there again, part of the perilous times that we live in and the compromises that take place and the deceptions in the last days, which is the title of my program, of course. So, you know, it's a major problem, and next week, you know, I'm going to, you know, going back to that man-made tradition of Peter as the first pope, I'm going to recommend a couple of different documents to you all. The first is by our very own director of Rapture Ready Radio, Jackie Alnor. Had a little mind melt there. Jackie Alnor, who is an ex-Catholic herself, and she had a list from November 12, 2011, entitled 95 Specious Lies of Rome. And then second, from another ex-Catholic, James G. McCarthy's fold-out chart entitled, and this is what I read from earlier, entitled Roman Catholicism, What You Need to Know, the 62 Primary Errors of Roman Catholicism. And so we're almost out of time. Next week, I want to point out, of course, I'm not going to go over all of them, but I'm going to go over a great deal of these things that are recommended. Jackie just reposted hers recently, and it's just really good, all this information. When you hear it, God bless you. I hope you'll be back next week. Good night.